On this episode, we discuss the movie set on the sexiest holiday, Labor Day. Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And interested in Stuart Wellington's new way of talking, I'm Elliot Kalin.
Should I not just keep doing that? Or?
Hey, it's up to you. It's a free country.
I mean, should I not keep doing that?
No, actually don't. Yeah. Started as Fred Schneider and then it became just kind of like, I don't know, a fat guy in an 80s comedy. Well, I don't know what's happening here. Well, you kids better stop it before I call the police.
There's a little Jimmy Stewart.
We'll shut down this bikini party.
Oh, old man Jimmy Stewart hates bikini car
washes.
Imagine
if Jimmy Stewart's career had really gone downhill and he had to do bikini movies. Well, what is that? That girl over here, over there is quite a beautiful piece of tail. Bobby, why don't you ask her out?
This was advertised as a bikini car wash. They're taking their tops off.
I'm not paying for that. This is a service I did not ask for. Well, I got a letter from the bank saying I have to lose my bikini store. I can't pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
We'll have to put on some kind of strip show.
My uncle left the bikinis, so they lost them somewhere. Sorry, anyway.
Wait, what?
I'm trying to do a It's a Wonderful Life thing.
Oh, I see. Where are the bikinis, old man? One of us is going to jail. It's not going to be me.
Jimmy Stewart's one of those accents for me that always comes out when I try and do Sean Connery for too long. I found a cure for cancer, but I lost it.
So what do we do on this podcast aside from bad impressions?
This is a Rich Little podcast. This is a
it's
podcast
very little.
Where we talk. Now, this is a podcast where we talk about bad movies that we just watched. In this case, the bad movie in question was a little number called Labor Day.
Labor Day.
Labor Day.
Actually, I think it was probably rated PG. Probably.
Named after PG-13, the day maybe. Every year America gives up all labor for 24 hours.
Or has a baby.
Wait, what?
Really, it should be called No Labor Day.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that joke that I've seen every day since Labor Day was invented.
Wait, really? You've been around every day since Labor Day? Yeah. Why would they make it Labor Day jokes every day? It's not topical. Why are you doing your Christmas material?
Well, for the first 2 years after Labor Day was invented, it was the talk of the town. It was on the tip of everyone's tongue. And then after that, they just become
tip of the tongue.
Labor, talk of the town. So
this movie could have been rated R, though, for hardcore pyry.
Now, yeah, there are a bunch of pyromaniacs in this, as in romantic pie makers.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, Labor Day, is that one of these Gary Marshall like holiday comedies like New Year's Eve or Valentine's Day or Arbor Day or Cinco de Mayo Day or a Day of the Dead Day or Armistice Day?
It is,
Boxing Day, the movie.
Starring Liam Neeson and Bill Nighy, the science guy.
Nighy. I would love to see a movie that is a comedy where the idea is that, like, some filmmakers in a small English town made their version of a Gary Marshall multi-character holiday movie, but it's Boxing Day. And it's just whoever the meta-ness of the movie is, the story is that they just rounded up whoever they could from around the town. So it's like the greengrocer and the alewife falling in love with each other, and a chimney sweep, and I don't know.
Chemist,
like,
the news agent.
The news agent, did you say?
Yep.
The news agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
See, when you said, I would like to see the Boxing Day comedy, I was thinking it would be a couple of washed-up boxers are like, they see
Calendar. Yeah, grudge match.
They're like, oh, Boxing Day. That's something that's observed in Canada. Clearly, we need to go up there because that's where we're going to be stars again. And they discover it's just a day when the servants got to open their presents.
It's just the day that they celebrate Boxing Helena.
Yeah.
Canada and the UK is his favorite movie.
Everyone dresses up as a torso. With no legs and arms.
And they play Living in a Box all day long.
So Labor Day, it's a comedy, right?
No, this is Jason Reitman is trying to
Funny
break
man,
out.
Jason Reitman.
More like Jason Wrongman.
Oh, man.
Wow, you zinged him.
Boom. He's not getting up soon from that, because I also punched him.
Wow.
Not really. Anyway, but what is this? So this was Jason Reitman's attempt at making an adult drama.
Yeah, we know him usually from such sort of more cynical comedies as your Thank You for Smoking, your Juno, you're Up in the Air,
why
your
are those
Young
mine?
Adult.
Why are they?
You
why
own the
is
rights.
My Juno, my
you own the rights. You are very rich.
No. I didn't realize. So apparently, I buy the rights to movies
you
that disappoint
care for those
me.
Movies.
Yeah,
but you figure
every time I see a movie I don't particularly like, I go, "Let me. I must buy it. I must own it and add it to my movie menagerie."
Because if you rid the world of all the imperfect movies, only perfect movies will be
only
left.
Perfect movies like Citizen Kane and Phantasm IV, Oblivion.
I don't want to live in that.
You don't. It's terrible.
Two movies.
The world. I thought you meant the world of Phantasm
you just
4,
rotated out.
Where it's, there's only four people and they're all in a desert all the time because there's no money.
Yeah,
a lot of tuning forks though. A
lot
exactly.
of tuning forks.
And a lot of babes, but instead of breasts, they have killer spheres.
Yeah, and Reggie Bannister is showing his age.
Yeah. Whoa. Take it easy, dude.
The guy who was already, like, balding and paunchy in the first movie. The most unlikely action hero.
That's what I like about him. Is
yeah,
that,
it's so great.
Is that in that movie, it's about a kid and his hunky older brother and their friend, the ice cream man. And over the course of the movies, the ice cream man becomes the hero and is involved in all the action scenes. But enough about Oblivion. We didn't watch Oblivion today. We watched Oblivion. Enough about fantastic movies. We watched Labor Day.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, so this was Jason Reitman's attempt to make a serious drama. He's breaking out. And let's give him ambition for breaking out of the box. He could have made unfunny comedies for a while, and instead he decided to make an unfunny, boring drama.
And I want to, you know, a little moment behind, a peek behind the curtain. We actually watched Labor Day.
The Jane curtain. Jane, can you move over a little bit? Thanks.
Okay. Now we can see the fact that we actually watched Labor Day on a screener, an award screener, that was sent because Elliot and I, both being in the
yeah,
industry,
you're really great
we're both
awesome
in the Writers
you.
Guild, so we
yeah.
can
we
vote
get
on the Writers Guild Awards.
Yeah, we
you're
get
insiders.
Yeah.
But so this was a movie that they thought had
in
real
that we're
awards
swimming insider
potential. This was a movie
this,
that
well,
they
it won Kate Winslet the Golden Globe.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
for, as a comedy,
you get it.
No, for drama.
Okay.
Yeah, for comedy and musical. But so this is the unlikely tale of a woman who finds love in the unlikeliest place.
Flash forward
with Josh
Brolin.
With not flash forward. The movie is set in 1987. Although much of the movie feels like it could have taken place in the 50s, 60s, the 40s. What I'm saying is, unless the kid is reading a comic book or a magazine,
yeah.
they do a or you see a movie poster in his bedroom wall, they do a not very good job
or
of
a movie marquee.
Having a sense of time.
Yeah, this could
have
been Steven Soderbergh's King of the Hill, for all
yeah,
that we know.
It's true. It would have been Mike Judge's King of the Hill, for all we know.
Yeah, sure.
But with Boomhauer showing up. Mm-hmm. No, but you're right. Sure. This feels very depression-y,
yeah.
and not just because I was depressed watching it. But then the character will take his
because
mom to go see Daryl in the theaters.
Well, part of it, I guess, is just that the very premise of the movie, which I guess we should state, which is a convict escapes and finds refuge in his house. No, but my point is, this convict escaping and staying in the house and finding romance, like, that feels like a noir, setup sort of,
It feels old.
From
feels
the past.
Yeah. Well, this is the past, Dan. It's 1987.
All right.
Almost 30 years ago. You feel old right now.
I do feel very old.
Yeah.
Back when Cracked Magazine existed.
People are still listening to Duran Duran, right, guys? That's still hip.
I mean, I don't think they were listening to it in this movie.
No.
This was like fucking Stephen King 1987.
Yeah.
That's the thing. This is a 1987 movie in which you hear no current music from that time, which is a little weird, even when they're in stores and cars.
And if the movies have taught me anything, in the 80s, people were constantly walking around solving Rubik's Cubes, and I didn't see any Rubik's Cubes in this movie.
It's like how it's in X-Men Days of Future Past, it's the 70s, and you know that because when Wolverine walks outside, everyone's dressed like a pimp. Everyone. So you gotta 80s up the clothes a little bit. So anyway, actually, and that's actually something that I think normally would be a strength in this movie, which is that they don't 80s it out.
Yeah.
It's not like everyone's dressed like our stereotyped idea of the 80s and listening to, the Bangles and stuff. Yeah, or watching Flashdance. But at the same time, they go too far in the other direction. You're like, when is this? Where? It's maybe they're going for like a classic look.
Yeah.
But anyway,
timeless,
it's,
but it makes it a little bit difficult because there's a lot of flashbacks in this movie, and you're like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's
difficult. Is this happening another town over?
That's a good point. There's flashbacks that's the stuff that's happening in the late 60s, early 70s, and you don't know that it's different. You think these, yeah, that it could be just cutting through space rather than time.
Sure.
Now, let's split time of the movie. It's 1987, and there's a woman, Adele, played by Kate Winslet, who is a single mom, and she is basically a shut-in. And she lives with her 13-year-old son, Henry, and she doesn't get out much. The dad left the family for his secretary, and so now it's just Henry.
The dad played by Clark Gregg.
Clark Gregg. Mm-hmm. Best known as Agent Coulson.
I shot
an albatross and hung it around my neck. That albatross's name was Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The 13
yep.
episodes
I was cursed
to be
on ABC
in this boring show.
To be the best thing.
Clark Gregg in The Rime of the Agent Coulson. There we stood. We are a show moving without any motion, like a painted ship on a painted ocean.
Our hubris was our downfall.
In thinking anyone would watch any crap with Marvel's name slapped on it. Anyway, so...
We love you, Clark Gregg.
I like him a lot,
sure.
Yeah. The point is, they're having trouble, and the son is trying to, like, make his mom happy, and he does this by, in the early movie, he makes a booklet that says, husband for the day, and it's coupons for, like, a back rub, and he'll do the dishes, and take her to a movie, but it's really creepy.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Well, I mean, the very name of it, husband for the day, sounds like a porn.
Yes.
The nicest porn ever.
Yeah.
Excuse me, ma'am. Might I be your husband for
the
day?
Might I put up with all your garbage for a day? And then we'll do
well, no, I mean, it's like, it was the name of like a Tijuana Bible or something.
Of what? Who are the famous characters who are in it?
John Dillinger.
John
okay. Dillinger was the husband
for
a day.
It was going to be Dagwood and Blondie or something.
Yeah,
it was going
like,
to be Popeye.
Marlena
really,
Dietrich
really
dresses up like a man and has
like,
sex
really.
With Greta Garbo or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Barney Google and Ingrid Bergman together.
Well, finally, it's one of those Tijuana Barbara finals. Yeah, where
it's a mashup.
Where Dagwood and Cary Grant double team Olive Oil. And it was made, and now it rests in the collection of some creepy overweight guy.
By the way.
Who bought it in an estate sale from pervert.
It's canonical, right?
Yeah, it's all canon. It's all Cary Grant canon.
You really have to think. I like to think, and you have to know this is true.
That's why Pluto's so mad.
There are people.
You'll give it up for a movie star and a guy who eats big sandwiches, but not for me. Yeah. That's Popeye. I was upset.
Yeah. You got to think.
Of course, Popeye is doing it with Nancy, so.
Sure.
There
are people listening to this podcast who have never heard of what a Tijuana Bible is before.
They don't know.
And are so baffled. And then they Google it
and they go,
so horrified. Anyway. I mean, charming. It's
to see all these 30s and 40s comic strip characters doing it. Like that big Wally Wood drawing while the Disney characters are having sex with each other. But anyway, so...
Classic stuff. Look it up.
So he's her husband for the day. They go see Daryl on a date.
We're
going
that
theaters.
Far into the movie,
but he said,
so much
and
plot. We'll get through
it's being narrated by grown up son and Tobey Maguire is doing the voice of the grown up son narrating,
which is, as we've said before, a bad sign for a movie when you have somebody like telling you the story about what their mother taught them as a child.
Yeah. Now, one day they're in a store, and the son and Henry is confronted by a man with a bloody shirt. Played by Josh Brolin.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, hey, can you help me? I need a ride. Your mom will give me a ride in a car, right? And he is... It's weird. It's... The movie is going, I guess, for, like, there's an air of something dangerous about him. But instead, he just comes off as, like, a really irritating house guest who won't leave. Like, he demands a ride home from them. Then he has to stay in their house for a couple hours. Then till nightfall. Then he stays for a couple days.
Well,
it's more like a guy they keep doing favors for than like a scary criminal.
And in the early scenes, there's a lot of bass in the soundtrack, so you know there's something suspicious.
The
right.
music is carrying a heavy load in this movie because there's a lot of slow nothing. and a lot of characters just kind of looking at each other and not doing much.
Staring up at the sky to where the baseball went.
Yeah.
Well, that first scene, too.
The music really is doing a lot of the work.
Brolin doesn't, like, ever say explicitly, like, what the situation... Like, he's not making, like, explicit threats or anything. Like, it's all... Like he's talking in code the whole time.
Yeah, which is...
And the soundtrack is telling us what's happening.
Well, I mean, it's subtle, and it wouldn't be bad if, like, the danger be unfolded. Like, they didn't realize how deep they were getting until it was too late. But instead, the music treats it like fucking Abel Magwitch just jumped at Pip in a graveyard at night and demanded a saw and some vittles or he'd strangle him.
And also, it seems
And yet, some great expectations will come from that moment.
What larks. But it seems like Kate Winslet, though, can hear the soundtrack because she is reacting.
She's like, that music is scary.
Yeah.
This is a bad dude.
Yeah.
He should be in the video game Bad Dudes, saving the president.
And not putting his hand on the back of my son's neck.
Now, is that the first time a person has ever made reference to Great Expectations and then Bad Dudes right afterwards? Maybe.
I mean, call Guinness. Look at the archives.
Okay, let's do this for most of that reference.
Yeah.
But yeah, so... he goes home and it turns out he's a convict who escaped from jail by jumping out of a window. He was hurt somehow and he's limping.
He
got blood on his side.
Yeah, he pretended he had appendicitis to get out of jail into the hospital.
And he stays there for a while, and to make a long story short, he and Kate Winslet almost immediately begin falling in love.
Start boning down.
And their love, their romance, their wooing begins when he compliments their home, then ties her up so that she can sell police that she was tied up gently, and then feeds her some chili that he made. He makes her some chili and ties her and then teaches her and her son how to make pies.
Yeah, well, he is a master chef.
This
he
is
be on the master
there's
chefs.
Literally a scene where she picks up a piece of food he made, and then her eyes go open as if, you know, she's just seen God through his food. She's tasted God.
That food is like stimulating her clitoris.
Wow!
Sorry.
What is this, deep throat? Is it in her esophagus?
I there was no way of not going gross, I realized, halfway through my thought, so
yeah.
I just went for
No, but it's
sure.
true. It's like he goes from scary to turning her on almost instantly.
Yeah.
And there's this, so,
yep.
And this movie seesaws
it's
back
like
and
crash.
Forth. Yeah. The movie seesaws back and forth between trying to make us tense and trying to show us passion. So there's a scene where J.K. Simmons, as the neighbor who has too many peaches, shows up with a basket.
So sexy, this J.K. Simmons.
He shows up with a basket of peaches, and Josh Brolin doesn't want anyone to know that he's there. So he, like, while the son is talking to J.K. Simmons, he has Kate Winslet in, like, an arm lock, you know, in case he has to use her as a hostage if something happens. And it's supposed to be tense, but then immediately she's like, we'll never eat all these peaches in time. And he goes, I've got an idea. And then there's, a 40-minute sequence where he shows them how to make a peach pie?
It's the most ridiculous. I mean, like, first, like, J.K. Simmons shows up and he's like, you know, like, I've got a basket of ripe vagina metaphors. And, like, then they're just, like, all, like, sticking their, like, hands into, like, these moist
and it's
peaches and, like,
it's
massaging
supposed to
them
be like
around.
Like water for chocolate, eat, drink, man, woman type sex and food thing.
Or like a Maria pasta commercial.
Yeah. Except the son is there also
the
sticking
also,
his hands
in
these peaches.
Just
and
like
it's,
getting up in those peaches.
As if it wasn't,
like fucking eat to mama tambien.
As if it wasn't already incesty enough that he was her husband for a day.
Yeah.
So
15 minutes later, what's the pie's baked?
And meanwhile, they're having these very quick flashbacks, like the pawnbroker or something like that, where you just see images and you slowly pick up that Josh Brolin was a soldier who came back from the war and had a baby with his wife, but things didn't work out with his wife. And eventually you learn that she was having an affair and she revealed to him the baby wasn't his. And he got mad and shoved her. And of course she hit her head on the radiator on the way down and died. And then he ran upstairs and found that his wife had left the bathtub running and their baby drowned. So, I mean, a pretty uplifting tale, right?
Yeah.
In the middle of this romance passion story.
I mean, it feels a little bit like...
It's like a Greek tragedy.
That they wrote this story, they're like, okay, so he's going to be a murderer. How can we make him a murderer, but, like, still kind of a good guy?
Well, it's like Con Air, where Nicolas Cage goes to jail for defending his pregnant wife.
Yeah, in both cases, we have, like, a convict Jesus character, basically.
Yeah. Well, Jesus was a convict.
Oh, yeah.
Except he got the death penalty.
But then he rose. 3 days later, I've got some pamphlets.
No, that's
Elliot,
not something I agree. You lost me.
Over to my side.
You lost me on that part. With the dark side?
It's fine. It's fine if you want to burn in hell, but if you want to, you know,
again,
accept the truth of
I
God's
don't believe
love.
Believe in it. God loves me so much, he's going to throw me to hell. He's going to drag me to hell, if
he's
you will.
He's going
to
snap his wrist and throw you down into hell.
Because
that's a reference to the movie where we watched
because,
where he taught, where Josh Brolin teaches the little kid how
because
to
here's the thing, Kate Winslet doesn't just fall in love with Josh Brolin for his pie-making prowess and his sexy goatee. It's because
prowess.
He is literally the best husband ever. This convict who's been there for a day. He fixes
on
their...
On day two, he starts just doing chores.
He's like, he fixes their rock wall, he counts all their firewood and tells them they're being shortchanged by the firewood guy, he fixes their car, he teaches Henry how to throw a baseball, he cleans out the gutters, he does... It's like...
He waxes the floors.
He waxes nostalgic for a time that never really existed. They start... And a friend of theirs, it's... comes over and forces them to babysit her disabled son.
Yeah.
And
you may remember her from Silence of the Lambs as a great big fat girl.
Well,
great
the
big
person
fat
who was
person.
Supposed to rub lotion on her skin,
yeah.
So she didn't get that.
She's in other movies, too.
Yeah. No, but that's her main thing.
That's her famous role as lotion girl. As girl who was almost but not made into a dress.
Yeah.
But even like and like
spoiler.
The convict even loves this kid, teaches him how to play baseball. Really, this convict
yeah, it's
is
like
the sweetest of sweethearts.
They wheel this kid in and you're like, I think the movie music tries to make you feel like Josh Brolin's totally just gonna snap this kid's neck.
That's the thing, every scene it's supposed to be super tense, like he's dangerous until he makes someone a meal or teaches them how to do something
like
that cleans their
house.
He's
going to snap this kid's neck, and then we're like, whoa, is he going to sleep with this kid?
And then so it's like, but are we? So we can't keep falling for the trap that this movie thinks we're going to fall for, where it's like, uh-oh, is he finally going to snap this time? Oh, no, he made them s'mores. Like, oh, maybe he's going to strangle the whole family and burn the house down. No, he's reading them a bedtime story.
Yeah.
Okay, this time. This time he's going to go on a kill spree and murder 40 people and have sex with their bodies.
I'm glad they didn't make s'mores, by the way, because that would have been a little too explicit.
It's like, oh, no, he's setting up an animal shelter.
A hotel for dogs.
Okay, now, seriously, he's going to rob a bank, but it's going to go bad. He's going to have to shoot a pregnant lady. Oh, no, wait, he's putting together a parcel of canned food for the homeless in Guatemala.
But the thing about, like, can we talk just a moment about this kid that they babysit, like, this disabled kid? It's just a very also off-putting scene because they turn this kid's disability into, like, a suspense thing.
Because he sees that when his mom comes to pick him up, the TV is on, and they're constantly broadcasting that this convict is on the loose. They show a picture of him, and the kid's like...
The town was on fire with his name.
Yeah, and the disabled kid starts trying to say the name of the... Trying to point out to his mother that Frank, this man that he's met, who is hiding right now, is the criminal. So he goes, Frank, Frank, Frank! And she says, stop it, stop. And then... Does she punch him?
She slaps him.
She slaps him really hard.
You watch television when you go home. And then she's like, shut up!
And so it's this little glimpse of like... This horrible situation where this abusive mom is just routinely hitting her disabled child, and then they mostly leave the movie.
Yeah.
But it was like, oh, okay, so the movie was worried we weren't depressed enough.
Yeah.
Let's add a little
Let's
bit more
literally
bleak in
wheel
here.
In someone to
is
depress
there,
you more.
Is there a way we could have Lars von Trier guest direct this scene? So but anyway, one thing turns to another.
His
and
soul is escaping his body.
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking that I think it's a little bit of bad taste that they named Josh Brolin's character Frank when he kind of looks like Frankenstein's monster.
He does a little bit, I guess, but like a cool, sexy Frankenstein.
Yeah, like,
monster.
I don't know how they made I, Frankenstein, and weren't like Josh Brolin. Are you free? Because you totally still look like
Jay Brolin's, come on.
Jay Brolin's.
Let's make this happen.
I know you're working on Jonah Hex 2.
or
Hexier.
Hat-headed hand herders, part 2. More hats, fewer hands.
Man, he's a good actor. His appearance is bad things.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad movies being made, and Josh Brolin is on their speed dial.
He's a working actor, you know?
Sure.
That's true. Would you rather he be starving for his artistic principles, Dan?
Yeah, you're right. I'm the real monster.
You are.
Not Frankenstein's monster. Me.
No, you are. I mean, the fact that you're a wolf man is part of it.
Like, I'm just a little hairy.
Ever since you were bitten by Wolfman Jack, the DJ.
Sure.
Anyway, One thing turns to another, and Adele and Frank, Kate Winslet.
I think it's literally only one thing. Very much stuff happens.
That's true. This is a 2-hour movie where there's maybe enough material for like a 15-minute student short. But they fall in love, and they decide they're going to run away to Canada, where I guess he's going to get. I think they may have misunderstood how
to,
it's,
to
like,
avoid the convict draft.
You know, they can't draft me to jail if I'm in Canada. And
we've got no extradition with Canada. I don't think
I think
that's
we actually
true.
Do. It's
probably
they'll never catch us. We can only get through the border patrols. Actually, the longest unguarded border in the world. But the
hold on. Keep going.
Okay, I have to yawn. So, but meanwhile, at the same time, Henry starts going out with a girl, and it's the kind of girl that you see in the movies where she's, I guess, manipulative and too is wise beyond her years, and by wise I mean cynical and manipulative. Okay. And she basically exists to sow the seeds of doubt in Henry's mind that this Frank character has replaced him in his mother's affections.
So early on, I was a little confused because the movie uses, the movie mixes in these flashbacks to, like, Josh Brolin's past. I think only Josh Brolin's past.
Only Josh Brolin's
but
past.
But then it also, it uses very similar methods to show this kid having fantasies of this girl.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of strange choice for the movie to use the same style for both its fantasies and its flashbacks.
Well, what is memory but a fantasy? We tell ourselves was real.
Yeah. I mean, some of it's, you know, it's corroborated by multiple people.
I mean, as some would say that fact and history have a way of merging into fiction and illusion. I believe it was Herodotus who said.
No, keep going.
That there were big ants in the desert that collected gold and had fur on them. Turned out that wasn't true.
That's amazing.
True story.
Why would you leave that part?
That's what he said, though.
Why would you stop before we were getting to that?
Did people ride on the ants, or were they
is this
their
that
own
big.
Economy?
No, they're like the size of like a dog.
Okay.
Was this like from nuclear testing, like in the van?
Yeah, it was from ancient Greek nuclear testing.
Okay. Was that both the male and the female ants, or were the females different, like in China Mieville's Perdido Street Station?
I don't remember. I think considering these animals never existed, in-depth studies were never done. But anyway, it is strange that I guess it's a way of showing interior monologue visually. But frankly, the kid's kind of sex flash fantasy was really the only part of the movie I liked because it...
All right, be fair. We saw a few fleeting glimpses of some comic book covers from 1987 and an old Cracked magazine.
That's true. The parts we liked were he goes and looks at a spinner rack of old comics and we're like, oh, we read those.
Yeah.
Although they were all DC books, which is not my wheelhouse. But then there's a part where it just pans across
which
his room.
Which is odd because Clark Gregg's in the movie.
Yeah, it should be Marvel books.
Yeah.
But maybe they didn't want to get into the whole new universe thing that was happening around then. You know, suddenly everyone's just thinking about the behind-the-scenes conflicts that were going on at Marvel and under Phil Shooter's leadership as editor-in-chief. You know, it's a whole can of worms that...
Back in the
50s? No, in the 80s.
Oh.
It's a whole can of worms that Labor Day just doesn't have the time to open up.
Yeah.
So they had DC books. But, like, it pans across this room and you see just the masthead of an issue of Cracked. You don't even see the full cover.
All three of us are like, oh, Cracked!
Cracked
what's Sylvester up to?
We talked about Cracked magazine for about 6 minutes. But, like, his fantasy scene, at least, shows some... There's, like, some interesting style and technique there and, like, a little bit of visual trickery. It doesn't really get across what it is like for a young boy to fantasize about sex. Not really, but...
I mean, that would be... you would have to have next rating for the... to really get into
this. Not necessarily, because a boy his age doesn't really know exactly how sex works.
That's true.
He's just interested he's interested in it, wants to do it, but doesn't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at that age, probably just some breasts would do it.
But, like, there's a shot of an image that he saw earlier, which is the girl
in breasts.
Just randomly flying through the air.
It's your run-of-the-mill breasts.
Not even special. Not even particularly good ones. Just open a door, there's some breasts behind it.
Was heavy metal out at that point?
I think so,
probably what his fantasy is.
But he saw the girl in front of him in class. You could see through the back of her shirt just the back of her bra strap. And, like, I remember as a kid, that was really exciting to catch a glimpse of just the strap of a girl's bra. So, like, that felt real to me in a way that the rest of the movie did not feel real at all, you know?
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? It's still not as good as the scene in The Ballad of Cable Hogue where he sees the girl's cleavage, and it just keeps flashing in his mind. But anyway, so they want to leave, but he starts worrying, I guess, that that they're going to forget about him when they go to Canada together. And at the same time,
those worries are almost immediately dissolved.
Yeah, and the mother of the disabled kid comes by and runs into Frank and sees this strange man in the house. Henry leaves a note at Clark Gregg's house saying, like, I'm going to go, but I'll be fine. So he gets suspicious. And one of these people...
Yeah, we don't know who.
We don't know who.
Wait, did you mention the beak? Did we get into the beak?
The beak?
The beak?
James Vanderbeek.
James Vanderbeek shows up for one scene as a cop who drives
like, he's also like a guy who may have gotten suspicious. We don't know.
Okay, yeah. So
there's a super tense scene.
There's a number of suspects who may have called the cops, but the important thing is the cops arrive, and Josh Brolin, because he's, of course, a saint, doesn't want them to get in trouble for harboring a fugitive, so he ties them up, pretends he kidnapped them. He goes to jail. He gets 10 years for escaping, 15 years for kidnapping. And we flash forward to the future. I forgot there's a scene at a bank that I'll tell you about, too, that's really stupid. We flash forward to the future, and we find that the grown-up kid, Tobey Maguire, is now a baker, famous for the pies he makes in the style the convict showed him. The convict
so he's an intellectual property thief.
Yep. Well, he didn't copyright that pie. It doesn't say copyright escaped convict.
By the way, a thing that we joked about during the course of the movie, the idea that this kid would grow up to be a master baker, became true at the end
as opposed to the master baiter he was as a kid.
Boom.
You got burned, kid, in the movie.
Burned that fictional kid.
Yep, he got burned. He got roasted. Yeah. So anyway...
Kid who looks like a young Alan Ruck.
He looks like he grew up to be Alan Ruck someday, which is not terrible.
No,
good run-up Spin City, Cameron in Ferris Bueller.
Was in a really good episode of Justified.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff.
What does he do? He was the dentist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What does he do now? I mean, he invented the rucksack, so he's rich. Acting is just a sideline. That's a hobby.
He invented a lynch roller he calls the Ruck and Roller.
And, of course, there's Ruck Rocks, which are just rocks he found that he'll mail to you for, like, $100.
The irony is he can't carry all of his riches in one of his patented rucksacks.
Yeah, they're too small. They're too small. Although legend tells of Alan Ruck's original rucksack that it, in fact, was a door to a pocket dimension and had no limits. Anything could be stored in it. And he used it on his many adventures to outwit death and various witches.
Point is, he's lived an amazing life.
Many are the myths and legends of Alan Ruck. From how he won the role of Cameron in a card game with God, to how his years on Spin City were spent while also being the king of the elves.
Sure.
He was just a stand-in king of the elves for a little bit of time, until the elf prince came of age. That elf prince's name? Matthew Broderick.
Yep. He followed his father Oberon to the...
his father Oberon Ruck.
Oh, Broderuck.
Matthew Broderuck. Oh, yeah, they're brothers. You didn't know that? Yeah, Alan Ruck is half-elf. He's so tall,
Broder means
know.
Brother.
In the elfin tongue, Broderick, yeah, means brother of Ruck.
Ill met by moonlight, Ruck.
Peas blossom. Meet ye Ruck.
Mustard seed.
There's that time, of course, when Alan Ruck's head was replaced with that of an ass. Yes, the tales. I can sit for hours spinning tales of Alan Ruck and his many quests. The many maidens he bedded and villains he foiled. The gold he found. The bed linens he soiled. The years he toiled, the seas that roiled, the girls he goiled, and of course, Agent Coulson, a hearty fellow and a battlemate of Alan Ruck. As side by side, they fought, I guess, like the Red Skull and the King of the Norns. Oh, Alan Ruck.
I would love if this started an internet meme on the level of the Chuck Norris meme. Suddenly, Alan Ruck is a folk hero.
He's like a Munchausen figure.
He's a fairy tale hero. I heard it was Alan Ruck who killed the big bad wolf.
Sure.
And freed Little Red Riding Ruck.
The tales of Alan Ruck riding that cannonball.
The reason why the moon hides its face most of the time is for the shame that Alan Ruck gave it when betting the wife of the Moon King.
That's why the castles and chests are called Rucks.
And why a mountain is made out of little Rucks. Yeah.
They say he bore a child with a bear, Teddy Ruxpin. And so a bear that could speak English as if man or woman roams the earth with his caterpillar friend. The caterpillar is not the child of Alan Ruck. And of course, who can forget Robin Hood's faithful sidekick, Friar Ruck? The name was corrupted over the years into Tuck, as of course was the basis of the book Ruck Everlasting. And, might I say, Ruck Norris, father of Chuck Norris.
This is so tangentially related to that movie.
In fact, in some counties in Ireland, they still say, good ruck to you. And to be surprised is still to have the ruck pulled out from under you. For Alan Ruck allowed old men to stand on him when crossing muddy streams. And yet he would roll aside, thrusting the old grandfathers into the mud, as to have a hearty chuckle. Oh, he was a charming rogue.
Oh, boy.
So what movie are we talking about? Labor Ruck?
Yep.
Oh, man.
We're talking about The Legend of Ruckules.
We could talk about Ruck Tales till the cows came home. Ruck Tales, a woo-woo. Might solve a mystery. Maybe re-ruck history. Ruckules, you said? Yeah. The 12 Labors of Ruckules?
Yeah.
Oh, or is that just Truckules? And of course, Ruck's truck. He drove around in.
Oh boy!
Who can forget when a young Robert Crumb met him and was inspired to say, "Keep on ruckin'."
Words
in the free world
certainly do sound like other
keep on
words.
Ruckin' in the free world, indeed.
Sure do.
So anyway, long story short. Josh Brolin goes to jail. He sees, years later, he sees a magazine article, I guess, in like Pie Monthly about Tobey Maguire's pie.
Yeah, he literally says something like, that looks like a familiar pie. Yeah.
Hey, I know that pie. He writes in to Tobey Maguire, says, can I see your mom sometime?
I bet it belongs to a pie guy.
From Super Mario Brothers?
A pie guy meets my eye.
Yeah. But, you know, your pie struck my eye like a big pizza pie. And I thought, I want amore.
With your mom.
When an eel, something, something, that's
amore. So
we
get some old age makeup at the end, right?
Yeah.
A tiny bit of old age makeup as Josh Brolin
is
reunited.
Looks like Tobey Maguire.
Reunited with Kate
and
Winslet.
And it feels so good.
As old people. And thus the story comes to its conclusion, And he literally says in his letter, you may remember I spent a Labor Day weekend with you once.
So we get title.
Yeah, like the kid is like, oh yeah, I forgot that time a convict
you know,
came to my house.
I wasn't sure which convict you were that came over and my mom fell in love with you. But you know what? It was you.
Yeah,
that's
you
right.
You had a beard, right? Is that you?
Taught me about pies? Yeah.
Kind of like a young Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, there was one idea that came up during the movie was a TV show called The Young Tommy Lee Jones Chronicles. Which would be him mostly, I guess, going to Harvard and then becoming a young actor.
Yeah,
appearing in the Executioner's
and
song and The Park is Mine.
Exactly.
And that cheerleading movie, right? Man of the House?
Manimal?
House Man?
Manimal of the House Man. The House Bunny. So that's Labor Day. It's a...
Yeah.
It's
in a nutshell. Or a pie shell.
I will in a pie crust. I will say this. I give Jason Reitman credit for trying something different.
Mm-hmm.
I take away that credit for him. It's a movie that confuses slowness and quietness with seriousness and emotion. And it confuses characters looking at each other with characters feeling.
Well, that's... We spun so many tales of Ruck that we probably
and yet there are so more to behold. A thousand one Ruckian nights.
There's a lot of shots in this movie that kind of remind me of shots from the
Tree of Life?
Man of Steel.
Okay.
Where it's like these
But that's the thing.
It's all ripped off Terrence Malick. But it's the idea of like imparting seriousness on bullshit. Where It's like Josh Brolin's teaching them to make a pie or some other kind of food, and he'll like pick up a knife, and then it'll slow mo on the knife while he reaches around Kate Winslet sexily.
Yeah, I guess yeah, it's like they're trying for a Terrence Malick feel. So when Terrence Malick makes movies, they're about kind of humanity's place in the universe and how people emotionally connect to each other. Whereas this is just about like a prisoner who teaches a family how to make pies.
Yeah, this guy with a goatee is a bad guy, or is he not a bad guy? Well, he shaved off his goatee. He's a good guy now.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, I wish they had made him someone who really had a past he was ashamed of, like who had done something bad, was a bad man, and
pushing
now
a woman to death is bad.
That's bad, but it is. But they made it so that it was an accident. He pushed her, but he didn't mean to do it. He's not responsible.
And
for
he's a cuckold, so everybody can identify with that.
Exactly. All of us have been cuckolded, except me. Or ruckled, as it was originally called. Because Alan Ruck danced from bed to bed, they said. There was many a village where all the children born in one generation had the telltale eyes of Alan
the
Ruck.
The tales of
the
Ruckinova.
Head.
Now, that's...
In fact, they would... I was going to make a Ruck you joke. But anyway.
Okay.
I would rather have seen a movie where... Mother Rucker, where this man caught a glimpse of the life that he wished he had, but because of his own actions, and he knows this, it is closed off to him. And he thought for a moment he might have a family, but instead he's doomed himself. But instead it was all people caught in circumstance, you know.
And basically a Harlequin romance.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting. Like, I think we can
sexy pie-making convict.
We can kind of skip Final Judgments, where we say whether there's a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie kind of liked. I think we all feel like it's a bad, bad movie. It's not terrible, but what I would say about it is, like, I'm not sure why, as you say, they took a Harlequin romance and just decided, like, oh, let's throw a couple of A-list actors at this. Because, like, this is just, I mean, like, the style and the content of it is so much just, like, sort of a bored fantasy of, like, I'm a kind of a dangerous man comes into this woman's life and...
But really
fulfills all of her needs, both sexual and chores-wise.
And chores around the house.
Well, that's the thing. Like, even before he shows up, they kind of introduce the characters in the house. And the whole time we're like, oh, that needs fixing. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's going to fix that later.
Guess he'll take care of that one. There's also a bunch of very ham-handed attempts at suspense, such as when Kate Winslet and her son go to take all their money out of the bank. And everyone at the bank immediately suspects them of something, but they don't know what.
Yeah.
Until the son breaks the tension by... making a joke of their actual plan to run for the border like criminals, because earlier Josh to live Moss. Earlier Josh Brolin told him that it's easier to mislead people with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the characters have to fake that they're really nervous, and the bank teller has to fake that she's really weirded out by what's happening, and it's the suspense is very
and we're also in a town where everybody is super interested in everybody else.
It's a small town.
Like, as soon as they're like, hey, shouldn't you be starting school tomorrow? Shouldn't you be starting school in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Dentist appointment on the first day of school, that's insane.
Your teeth need to learn.
Let's just move
so
along.
So bad, final judgments. Now what do we do now, Dan?
Move along into letters from listeners, devoted listeners to the podcast.
Listeners of the podcast.
Right in.
Listeners of the podcast,
devoted
send them some letters.
Listeners.
Devoted listeners, not any of you fair weather fans. Just kidding. Send us some letters too.
Send us those letters.
Men and women, boys and girls, all over the world.
Okay.
Send us your letters, but first, take those letters and put them into words, then arrange the words into sentences.
Don't forget to sign your letter.
With your name, or someone else's, if you're trying to frame them with the name them with the frame. There's a lot of things that have been covered in this song.
Then we'll frame your letter.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we
thanks.
Frame every letter we get.
Thanks, guys.
We use e-frames, the digital frames that you put on emails.
Yeah, sure. This podcast is sponsored by e-frames, the company that doesn't exist, I think.
With a product that doesn't make sense.
So, this first letter...
allows you to frame somebody electronically.
Stands for Elliot Frames.
Like this. Hello, Flophouse. I'm only 12 years old, but I listen to your podcast.
That is not appropriate.
That's terrible.
No. I am only...
Mom!
Mom, what's a tarp foursome?
I am only 12, so I don't have a remark about a reference in some episode. Wow, he's really leaning on this, the fact that he's 12.
We get it, kids. He's 12. Thanks for writing in, though.
My favorite flopper is Stewart.
Hey, you're the future. Because he's a totally rad dude.
But Elliot and Dan have a tie for second.
Oh, thanks.
Your podcast is excellent, and I will keep on listening.
Thank you.
Keep on flopping from Connor, last name with L.
Thanks, Connor. That was very nice.
Yeah, I do think that maybe your parents should keep a closer eye
on what you listen to.
But
either your parents... listen with you,
cool.
Or have no idea
to sleep.
No, it's fine.
Hide under the covers, listen to a really cool podcast.
I watched...
It's keeping them off the streets, you know.
I watched so many R-rated movies as a kid, as a result of my parents' laissez-faire style of parenting. And look, I turned out okay.
Yeah, mostly.
Sure.
I mean, you're kind of a pervasoid, but otherwise...
Sure.
No,
I'm the number one pervasoid. If you're going to do
your
something,
your parents are very proud.
Full out.
Your mom is always like... Did you hear about my son, the number one pervasoid?
Yeah, we saw
my mom
sticker
is Jewish
on the back of your car.
Yeah, your mom is now Jewish, too. Yeah, the student says my son is a pervasoid, is an honors pervasoid.
Yeah.
My other car is a son. When I was 12, I was listening and watching, too, and reading so many things that were not appropriate.
So,
Paul's car was a chariot.
This next letter... During the After Earth discussion, you lamented that there were no quality butt-centric science fiction narratives outside of the porn parody subgenre.
Did we do that?
I guess we did. Well, I'm here to tell you...
This is a dumb
was
podcast.
Was it because of all the butt shots of the little kid?
Oh, no.
I don't know.
It's possible. Well, I'm here to tell you that you are wrong.
Robert Hindloins, the butt is a harsh mistress.
Hindloins.
Hindloins. Robert Hindloins, stranger to strange butt.
When I was a young man.
Isaac Asimov's foundation in butt.
Ray Buttbury. Anyway.
Arthur C. Crack's 2001 A Butt Odyssey.
The three laws of robotics.
One, a butt cannot harm a human, or through an action allow a human to come to harm. Two, a butt must do whatever a human tells it, unless it conflicts with the first rule. And three, a butt must save, it must preserve its own life, unless it conflicts with the first
three,
two laws.
Three, a butt must be sexy. No, he says, when I was a young man, in the midst...
I believed in silly things.
In the midst of middle school summer reading shopping, I happened upon a book that would change my life forever.
Robotics.
The title of this historic tome, you ask? Why, it's The Day My Butt Went Psycho.
Oh, I know that book. Yeah,
the whimsical tale of a young man whose posterior has run amok. Having detached itself from our hero, the titular rump has brought it upon itself...
Buttular.
...to lead the revolt... of the world's butts, but this is barely scratching the surface. As the foreword of the book puts it, this book is full of disobedient butts, runaway butts, psycho butts, kamikaze butts, exploding butts, cluster butts, nuclear butts, giant unwiped butts, butt rallies, butt catchers, butt fighters, butt hunters, butt guns, and explosive butt canoes.
So I fail to see how this is speculative fiction that either predicts where technology is going or comments on our social relationships through the metaphor of a future or other world.
Well, as a young preteen, this was the funniest piece of literature I had ever read. And even now as an adult, with a preteen sense of humor, I still find a good chuckle from it now and again. I highly recommend a read, if only out of curiosity. Thanks for the laughs, and keep up the good work. Yours in floppage, Nick, the last name withheld.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Again, I don't know if it really fits in the SF genre.
No, but I appreciate you keeping me up to date on the latest or the oldest in butt news.
Sure,
so,
old butts are cool too, right?
I guess.
I mean, as long as they're toned.
All right. Well, we're getting into a weird area.
Yeah, like Jack LaLanne's butt.
Yeah, that man. Va va boom. So this next letter, my darling peaches. As I made my way through the
flop house... Is this a Civil War letter?
Thanks, Mrs. Dalloway.
I was delighted by an offhand comment Elliot made in the Happiest Millionaire episode. He mentioned another 1960s live-action Disney film, The Ugly Dachshund, and instructed the floppers to write in if we had seen this classic. I am answering that clarion call of fate. Hell yes, I've seen it. The premise is a hilarious mix-em-up, which involves the nagging shrew of a wife bringing her dachshund to the vet to have a litter of puppies. The vet is a kindly old dude who takes pity on the oafish put-upon husband by sneaking a Great Dane puppy into the litter so the man won't be stuck with a terrible wife and a house full of ankle biters, but will have a proper dog of his very own.
I'm going to take issue with the terms hilarious and dude used in this letter.
At no point does the wife say, "Wow, look, there's a Great Dane in this litter of dachshunds." Everyone just accepts that this giant dog named Brutus
Editor
is a dachshund.
Dachshund have a Marmaduke.
The ugly dachshund has it all. Multiple scenes of canine antics in which the mischievous dachshunds make a huge mess and pit it on poor, sweet Brutus. 1960s Disney casual Asian racism. A big dog show finale. Actually, I think that's it. But what else do you need? I mean, there's a scene where an Asian caterer mistakes Brutus, the Great Dane, for a lion, runs around a party screaming, "Ryan! Ryan!" And in their terrified state, destroys a pagoda. This was my favorite movie as a child.
Pagoda?
A pagoda.
Oh, pagoda.
An Abe Pagoda.
Abe Pagoda. The Japanese sitcom star Abe Pagoda.
Yeah. Dan, at this point...
I don't even like a veal piccata.
Dan, at this point, I would like to give you an appreciative shout-out for being so steadfast amid all the chaos of your adorable co-hosts. I can only assume...
Chaos is what the Orthodox Jews grow. Side rules and chaos.
I can only assume Elliot
Dr.
Stewart...
Dr. Chaos from the Planet of the Apes movies.
I can only assume Elliot and Stewart have interrupted you several times by now.
Well, we wouldn't if he said words properly.
I talk so quickly because I'm trying to keep from being interrupted.
It's a violent cycle.
Yep. And by now, you have handled it graciously, truly making you the Brutus the Great Dane to Elliot and Stewart's pack of devious dachshunds. Y'all the best, Tessa, last name with help.
Thanks, Tessa.
Thanks for writing in, Tessa.
No, that's, it's not as advertised as my interest in butts, but I'm also interested in dachshund news.
Really?
Not really. But
because I've only ever heard you talk about butts. Never heard you talk about dachshunds.
When it comes to stupid Disney live-action films of the 60s, definitely.
Oh, sure, okay.
I love that.
Okay, so send in that news,
yeah.
People, I guess.
So if you have any...
anything about the nine lives
about...
of Thomasina? Anything about the Million Dollar Duck? Anything you got there? But moving on.
The computer wore dog shoes.
Pardon me.
I will not.
The next letter.
You're going to the chair. You will not receive a pardon.
It seems inevitable that a Black Friday-centered movie will make it in the near future.
Well, the movie Friday.
No, okay.
Oh.
The holiday Black Friday will be made in the near future. My question...
Holiday?
Yeah, the Gary Marshall movie Black Friday about people shopping.
Oh, I thought it was like... never mind. I misunderstood.
This writer's question is, what will happen first? A Black Friday horror film in the style of The Purge, or a wacky Black Friday holiday movie, Christmas with the Crank style? Which comes first, and how do you cast it? Thanks, dudes, and keep on flopping in the free world into 2014 and beyond. So this is old. Dash, last name withheld, former contest winner. Dash.
I remember Dash.
Yeah.
Nice to hear from you again.
So if it's a if it's like a futuristic sci-fi horror movie, clearly it's like The Running Man.
Yeah, yeah.
With cool characters like Buzzsaw, Fireball, Dynamo.
Buzzball, Firemo. and of course, Rucky.
Flat Top.
Rucky
with Fireball.
Forever winner.
Shoots a lot.
The Rucking Man.
Friday.
That's why it's called The Rucking Man, because he was their only winner ever.
Yeah.
I think it would be a comedy, because you have all these different storylines, and they're all going to the same store to get the same item.
Well, I mean, the movie is clearly going to be sponsored by Walmart.
Some kind of up top. Some kind of an
It's
going to
be
style.
An internship situation, like where Google's behind it.
Yeah, unless it's like a found footage horror movie about people being stampeded to death as other people try to get $10 DVD players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, $10 to watch a DVD.
It's
amazing.
It's a good deal. It's a good deal. I mean,
that's a digital versatile disc.
It's so versatile. And it's so digital.
You can use it as a frisbee. You can put your mug on it.
Yeah.
It's very versatile.
You can break
finally,
it.
I can answer the question as what are the chapter titles for Point Break?
Finally. Who would you cast in it? Your regulars. Your Hector Elizondo, your Ashton Kutcher. your
Ben Grimsby.
Yeah.
He'll be the Walmart.
Your Ginger Garmeners.
And of course, Owl Magical in a small role. Who else?
CG for him.
Your Bradlin Whoopsie.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Your Jessica Alberts.
Your Charlene McCranes.
Your Willie Tallsalts. Winston Legthug.
Yeah, of course.
Meat
your Susan
Barry.
Saran Wraps.
Speaking of Cracked Magazine.
Your Hanky Berries.
Yeah,
and of course, your Alan Rucks.
But We have a really short last letter before we move
These
on
are
to
the
our
scary
final
ones.
Hey guys, I ate mushrooms one weekend for the first time,
okay.
And somehow ended up listening to your show for the first time
again, right?
as well.
Inappropriate.
A long, slow, weird story short, I ended up listening to like half of your catalog that night. But the reason I'm emailing is because it didn't stop there. For the next 2 weeks, every movie I watched was narrated by the Flophouse. It was awesome. I don't only feel like I know you guys, but that there's a psychedelic bond, especially with Elliot. You rock. Travis, last name with Hill.
Thanks, Travis. It's really nice.
The least likely one of us to do mushrooms is the one that...
I already do not trust my perception of reality. I am not going to make it any
sure.
weirder.
Yeah.
The number of times I think there's a thing behind me, only to turn around and find there's nothing there, I don't want to make that more.
You're saying that you always feel like somebody's watching you.
Yeah, exactly. Or like I'm like the hero of the Iron Maiden song, Fear of the Dark.
If anyone else is...
That's he's a hero, right?
Yeah, he's the good guy.
He conquers over the dark.
Yeah, he's the white hat.
I feel like if anyone else has any Flophouse-related drug hallucinations, I would love to hear it.
Sure, yeah.
But now...
Other than us.
We need to move on to the final segment, where we recommend...
Final
movie.
Segment.
Last of the night. This segment is final. Finish him. Flawless victory. Babality.
Wow, he did it right away.
Friendship.
These are bits that we haven't heard in a while.
Yeah. Radar is playing at
Rarow!
Huskat.
Uh-oh.
So R-O-C-K in the USA, etc.
So anyway.
Is this the last episode, Dan?
I don't know. It could be.
Yeah.
If we're all hit by a bus tomorrow.
So movies that we want to recommend that we enjoyed. I'll kick it off.
This is when we recommend movies we didn't dislike.
Yeah.
Or to put it another way, movies we liked.
Okay.
When I was...
young, life was so wonderful.
When I was on vacation,
you flew on the
recently.
Plane during that vacation.
Guess what he watched on the plane?
No,
movies.
No. When I was in a hotel in London, I turned on the television.
They call it telly there.
And
after Telly Savalas, the inventor of the television.
What did my wondering eyes did appear but the Crazies remake.
Oh.
And I want to recommend...
Josh Duhamel?
No, Timothy Oliphant presented, but...
Timothy's Elephant.
I want to recommend, actually, both versions of The Crazies. Both versions of The Crazies. I think that the first...
That's crazy.
The first version of The Crazies, now...
Which stars my friend Natalie's dad.
Really?
Yeah.
If you don't know The Crazies, it's basically George Romero remaking his zombie movie, but it's a movie about, an military... agent, like an Agent Orange style,
like an Agent Coulson
that is improperly disposed in this small town, like
Return of the Living Dead.
And guess what? People go.
They go crazy.
Yeah,
and they start killing each other. And it's an interesting movie in a couple ways. I feel like Night of the Living Dead, the original. There's a lot of talk about George Romero talks about how he didn't really intend necessarily for it to be making. A big societal
point.
Yeah. It was just the fact that there was colorblind casting of the main role that it took on this extra element. But The Crazies...
He intended to just be the follow-up to his hit film, Romero and Juliet.
Right. Well, The Crazies seems to be much more explicit taking on of the Vietnam War through a horror movie. So it's interesting in that it's Romero reacting to his previous film in that way. But it also, I was thinking about it, like... The Crazies was Romero. Like Romero started the whole modern zombie film.
Mm-hmm.
Like he birthed that, but he also with the
From
Crazies,
out of his head, like Zeus.
Mm-hmm. He anticipated where the zombie film eventually would go with this idea of
Crazy.
Like zombies as something that's created by like this virulent agent, this like some sort of disease,
some umbrella core.
Yeah, I mean like. He basically invented the revisionist zombie movie himself later on, which is kind of an interesting thing to think about. And it's not as good as Night of the Living Dead, but it's a lot of fun if you like a George Romero horror movie. And the remake is a surprisingly good modern horror movie.
It does not have my friend Natalie's dad.
It
does not have Will McMillan in it.
But
it
I love,
does have Josh Duhamel. Right?
No, it's got Timothy Oliphant.
Timothy Elephant.
He's like the crazy version of Josh Duhamel.
He's the rich man's version of Josh Duhamel.
Which is ironic, because Josh Duhamel played a character named Danny McCoy.
I don't think that's ironic.
I don't understand the irony
on a popular TBS rerun show, Las Vegas.
Anyway, the point is, I pretty much like Timothy Elephant in anything. Guy's a good actor.
He is.
He's handsome.
Very charming.
I like him a lot. So, see,
liking
like
him
he's
is
a little scary.
Justified.
So those
and
are
also
my recommendations.
Deadwood.
Both the old and
he's
new
not
versions.
Deadwood. I'll have to see the new one. I like the old one, but I haven't seen that one.
So what do you guys got? Who wants to go?
Stuart, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go. I'm going to recommend a movie I don't think you guys have recommended yet. And it's a movie that by the time you're listening to this will probably be out of the theaters, which is too bad because it was really good. I'm going to recommend Edge of Tomorrow, a movie that there's been a number of think pieces.
Yeah,
there's a lot of positive reviews on the internet.
A lot of stink pieces.
There's not a lot I can say other than...
Cracked Magazine.
If you haven't seen it yet, you should really give it a shot. The marketing campaign was not particularly great.
It was particularly terrible.
Yeah, I'm looking at a poster right now that says the tagline for Edge of Tomorrow is... Live on the edge.
They did their
best.
Are
you selling Mountain Dew or
they did their best.
Some kind of pizza flavored snack.
Did their best for this ad campaign to make it appear as generic and oblivion-y as possible.
And I feel like at this point,
and
his
not
career,
Phantasm IV Oblivion.
No, that would be great. I would totally go see that. That's part of the thing is that I feel like at this point, a lot of movies, even though Tom Cruise is great in it, and he's great in a number of movies. A lot of times people don't want to see Tom Cruise because of Tom Cruise, the person.
Mm-hmm. But that forgets the fact that he's a very talented movie star.
Exactly. Yeah. And he uses his movie stardom in a way to kind of play in this movie.
He's
funny.
He knows his persona on screen so well now, and he can use it as a tool to do the performances in an interesting way.
And Emily Blunt is amazing.
She's amazing. So, totally, don't go see Lucy. Go see this.
I mean, don't go see Lucy. Probably.
Don't go see Lucy.
Lucy continues to pass on the myth that people only use 10% of their brains. Which is
you use 10% of your, I don't know, money in your pocket.
I kind
of
want to see Lucy, though.
Well, you can do that, but you've already seen
Edge
Tomorrow.
I've seen Edge Tomorrow.
So,
I've seen Lucy.
So I get a hall pass for that?
You get a hall pass. But you don't come back stinking of Lucy. Okay. You better wash that shit off first.
Lucy is basically just...
smear burritos on yourself. So
sheet here.
That's a reference to the
dirt, the Molly Crew story.
Burritos.
Okay.
I love the idea. Like,
so you live
there
on
was
the
nothing,
edge.
There was nothing less extreme than fucking a burrito that was going to take the owner of another woman's
other
like,
women's
bits and pieces off of.
Bits and pieces. Because what?
I've
been blown up? were they having sex in a battlefield?
I feel
World
like
War
I was a little too gynecological earlier in the podcast. So I'm
oh, it's too late. The 12-year-old has heard it all.
Sure.
Elliot.
I'd like to recommend two movies, but real quick.
Whoa.
One is a big-budget movie that's in the theaters now. It's called Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and it is the second of the new Planet of the Apes movies, and I thought it was really great. If anything, I liked it a little bit more than the last Planet of the Apes movie, which I also thought was really good.
So you'd say, wake up to this dawn.
I would. I would say there's a scene where an ape on horseback wielding a machine gun jumps through a wall of fire, and it was that point I realized this is why movies were invented. That image justifies the entire history of film and all the billions upon billions of dollars that have been poured into this art form.
It's like the image your mind created when watching 2001 and the ape is standing in front of that obelisk, right, and holding the bone.
I mean, that's a great image, too.
Someday that bone's going to be a machine gun.
I was like, this needs
a machine gun,
a horse, and some fucking fire. And the other movie I'd like to recommend...
We'll talk Kubrick.
...is I'm a big fan of Steve Coogan's show, I'm Alan Partridge, and the Alan Partridge character.
But did you watch the Alan Partridge?
And I just recently watched, finally, the movie Alan Partridge Alpha Papa, which came out last year, I guess.
I think in the U.S. it's just called Alan Partridge. I think
on Netflix it's listed as Alan Partridge
really?
Alpha Papa, which is the UK title. It's not a good title. But I found it to be really funny, and it's not the most... amazing movie, but like for considering it's the only comedy that's new that I've seen in a while where I was like consistently laughing, and a lot of that is just because Steve Coogan is so funny in that character, and he has a lot of great lines, and they don't go too big with the story. Like, it's not Alan Partridge solving a a murder mystery. It's not him on a big adventure. His bag doesn't get mixed up with a spy's bag, and he's on the run. Like, it's a pretty small-scale story, but done with a lot of humor and a little bit of heart.
Well, and I read a review where they, you know, I think it might have been over at the Dissolve, where they made a good point where they're just saying that it's an interesting movie, too, because they're putting a character who is resolutely self-interested in a position where he has to be, like, at least a little bit of a hero. So that makes for a good comedic conflict.
But he is, his self-interests are constantly getting in the way of him doing anything heroic. He's still an asshole.
Yeah.
And hey, who's that? Miles O'Brien from Star Trek The Next Generation Deep Space Nine? Is he in it? Yes, he is.
Wait, is that Odo?
No, Miles O'Brien's the character.
Real quick, I'm going to jump in, and I want to make a second recommendation.
Whoa.
That's allowed, right?
Unprecedented.
This is... there's nothing in the rule book that says he can't. There's nothing in the rule book that says a dog can't recommend a movie.
I want to recommend...
Stuart, are you a dog?
I want to recommend what I would consider to be a great bad movie, a movie that is the type of movie that I wish every time we sit down for one of these Flophouse podcasts.
Deep in your heart.
Yeah.
You're dreaming.
Last weekend, I participated in a Flophouse Facebook group watch where members of the group over on the Facebook page watch a movie, and we watched Double Dragon, which is amazing.
Okay.
So if you haven't seen Double Dragon, it's on Netflix. Watch it. It is amazing. Patrick is insane.
I stopped by Stuart's apartment when he was finishing watching this. That's right. We hang out in real life. Jealous. And, it's pretty crazy.
So, yeah.
If you want to see...
And if you haven't joined our Facebook group, it's fun.
If you want to see some of the zaniest...
Unless you're a fucking sex bot.
Yeah.
Take that Ray-Ban business.
Wait. If you're a sex pot, feel free to join.
That's why I don't think Ray-Ban sponsors us, is because they're too busy setting sex bots to infiltrate us for
also,
free.
Also, you know...
Hey, sex bots have feelings, too.
If you're not nice, maybe don't join. I feel like when it was smaller, like, it was easier to keep out people who were maybe harassing people.
Wow. Has that been a problem lately?
As the group grows larger, it grows more like the internet at large.
I see. Well,
if you're going to harass anybody, harass me.
Yeah.
As
Stuart
can take it.
As Kurt Vonnegut once said, be nice on the Flophouse Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. But those are
Cat's Cradle, right?
Yeah. And the Silver Spoon, Little Boy Blue, etc.
Great.
When you come coming home, Stuart. I don't know when. Let's get together then, Stuart.
Great recommendations.
Ugly Kid Joe.
But now we need to...
Classic Ugly Kid Joe song.
We need to sign off.
Let's
so
wrap
we can
it up.
Gather around Elliot's feet and listen to more Tales of Rook.
Oh, yes, children. gather ye round. For now the story of how Rook deceived the Baba Yaga and won the rights to the chicken leg house
and
turned it into condos.
And won the rights to the movie Boat Trip.
Only to lose them in an arm wrestling match with a giant.
But before we...
The
we,
moral of the story is, Rook happens.
We'll take that story off air. In the meantime, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And I will continue to be Elliot Kalin as long as I can help it.
Good night, everyone.
What's your drink in there, a gimlet?
The lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue.
Hamburgers. Hamburgers. All in a bag. Hamburgers.
Wait, that's your vocal warm-up?
Yeah.
I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Glorp mush. Glorp mush. Glorp mush glug glug.
Is that your Mad Magazine?
this is my Tom Martin vocal warm ups. Spoing, spoing, sprong, phone bone. Kasploing, shalop.